Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Average Joe's wins in a shocking upset.
I feel shocked.
You suck compared to me.
So you guys are two prep school white guys podcast.
We are underdogs.
They stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
I haven't even told anybody this. This is kind of crazy.
Robinson for three.
Hello and welcome to the Long Shot Podcast. I'm your host, Davis Reed, and I have a very special episode this week. I sat down with one of my best friends in the world, a former teammate of mine and Duncan's at Phillips Exeter, now the assistant coach for the women's basketball program here in Ann Arbor at the University of Michigan, Harry Rafferty. Harry knows Duncan better than I think really anybody that I'm aware of outside of Duncan's family. And so I've been wanting to have him on the podcast for a while. Duncan and I have been wanting to have him on the podcast for a while. He's been referenced a lot to the point where it was just time to introduce him to the Long Shot community, and I let him know that. So he comes on. We have an awesome conversation just about our friendship a little bit, but also his and Duncan's friendship, which started in second grade. So he really saw everything just from a really unique perspective. And so it's interesting to talk about Duncan's story with him. We also talk a little bit about women's basketball, and he is a basketball junkie, one of the smartest guys that I know. And so it's a fun one. I really hope you guys enjoy it. I am getting ready to move from Ann Arbor. It's sad. It's a chapter closing, but headed back to Kansas City with Casey, which we're really excited about. We're excited to get back home. And so I wanted to make sure that I sat down with Harry and talked to him in person before we left. Hope you guys enjoy this one. Thanks for tuning in. We've had this conversation a million times about Duncan, but you hold a mic and it all of a sudden feels different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's something that we still have not gotten used to. And so, yes, Duncan and I will. And now I'm just talking into the mic to get, try to make it feel normal, but it doesn't. It just doesn't. And yeah, we've done it a million times and we still will have moments where we just look at each other and we're like, you say something. No, you say something. Yeah, no, you say something. Yeah. And then you just have to stop. The first episode we ever did, I don't actually think I've told this story, so we might keep this in the podcast. But the first episode we ever did, January 2021, we're at his apartment. We go sit in his guest bedroom, which we turned into a studio. And by turn into a studio, it was just this. We set up an iPhone on a ring light, and then we're sitting on his couch. And we had written down like five topics of what we wanted to talk about, but it was very broad and we didn't practice it or anything. So we just went and sat on the couch and started talking. And 5 minutes in, it just stopped and it got completely silent. And we both just started like awkwardly laughing and then just stopped. And we didn't really know what we were doing. And Duncan later in it, what happened is we were like, okay, we need to reset. We put down a more thought out plan and then went back and did it and it was fine.
Yeah.
But Duncan later admitted that in that moment, he was like, did I mess up asking Davis to do this with me? Like, this was weird. Like, maybe I should have had someone who had podcast experience. Cause he's like, cause I don't have any podcast experience.
Yeah.
So the two of us are just like completely lost puppies.
Caught
like
in the moment. Yeah.
Deer in the headlights. Had no idea what we were doing. So the point being, you and I can sit here and talk like we have a million times, but as soon as like you know that that camera's on and you're holding the mic and it just feels a little different.
It does. It does
but,
right now.
It's kind of nice. It's kind of nice.
It's a different experience.
All right. I'm now introducing, speaking of having no plan, I didn't really have a plan for you either, but I do want to give you an intro. I'm now introducing Harry Rafferty from Dubuque, Iowa, from Wheeling, Virginia, from Rye, New Hampshire, from Berwick Academy, from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Where's home?
Now I would say Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Okay, but, from Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
But when we were teammates in high school first,
yeah,
Wheeling, West Virginia, you got some of that.
Yep.
And then in college, for sure, Dubuque, Iowa, before Geneva, New York, and then even Nashua, New Hampshire on the back end of it.
Okay. I'm going to go Portsmouth.
Yeah.
I'll go back to my
A little disrespectful to West Virginia, though, that you said Wheeling, Virginia. Wheeling, West Virginia.
I knew it was West Virginia. It's heat of the moment. Again, as the camera's on. It's awkward. All right. From Portsmouth, New Hampshire, / Ann Arbor, / Wheeling, West Virginia, / Dubuque, Harry Rafferty, my former teammate, Duncan's former teammate, was in my wedding. 1,000-point score at Wesleyan University. Sioux Falls Sky Force, sir. What do you refer? Like, if you're a Detroit Piston, if you play for the Pistons, you're a Detroit Piston. If you play for the Sioux Falls Sky Force, you are a...
I mean, I would say I was a practice player for the Sioux Falls Sky
Force. That's not true. You played in four games?
Four games on the roster for five.
So you're not a practice player, by definition.
By definition.
You're also doing a good job holding the mic to your mouth. We have a lot of people who don't do it.
Who struggle with that.
Really struggle with that. It's something that I still struggle with too. Former Sioux Falls Skyforcer. Player. Yeah, that's the term I'm going to go with. Okay. Now assistant coach of the women's basketball team here at the University of Michigan. Coming off their best year ever. Not entirely because of you, but you deserve a sliver of credit. Just a sliver.
A sliver is correct. I appreciate that.
An amazing
but definitely
year, a magical
the
year.
Credit goes to Kim Barnes-Rico, just so yes. We are very clear. And
Nas.
And Nas Hillman.
And the entire and the senior players, class. Every one of the players.
All the players, all 15.
You guys were magical.
Yeah. I mean, also, I just want to give a quick shout out to the two other people who've been here for all Kim's years. Amy Mulligan, Sarah Van Meter, the two longstanding members of Kim's staff. Those Legends. Two deserve a lot of credit, too.
I will say, living here in Ann Arbor this year, largely because of you, but also just because it's fun to watch basketball. I have watched more women's basketball this year than ever in my life, probably combined. And that's an indictment on who I am as a person. I need to be better. But God, it was fun to watch you guys. And we'll get to some Michigan basketball later. I want to start with Duncan Stories. This is a really long intro for you. But Harry Rafferty, been referenced on this podcast probably 43 times. I went back and counted. No, I didn't. But a lot. And so it just felt like it was time to introduce you to the long shot community.
Well, I appreciate you bringing me in first off. And yeah, I mean, I'm excited to be here. We've known each other for a long time. I've listened to every episode of the podcast, some of them twice. Certainly the Elizabeth Robinson episode twice.
Special episode.
But yeah, I'm a big fan of what you're doing. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. This one's not that different from the Elizabeth episode in the sense that it's fun to, the goal is to like build the, I think the podcast, here's what I'm trying to do. I'm just going to peel back the curtain here for a second. I think the podcasts that like create the world around it or like introduce you to the world around it are fun because it just, it makes it a more immersive experience. Like we are so grateful for the people that listen to this episode and we reference things outside of our lives enough that it's fun to like bring those into the show. You are a perfect example of that. We've told, like I said, I seriously think we've probably told stories about you over 10 times on the podcast just because you're such an important part of me and Duncan's life. I mean, again, you're in my wedding. We went to high school together. We went to college together. And you've known Duncan since elementary school, since second grade.
Second grade. Rivals of the Rye Little League league that we were in. You were in second grade. You had got a tryout going into third grade to be in the big league. You know, there was the AAA, the major leagues. I think they called them the NL and AL, the minors, actually.
Whoa.
And once you got to fifth grade, you were automatically in it. But third and fourth graders had to try out. So the fact that Duncan and I were part of a handful of third graders to make
it's like a league company.
Big league. Yeah, oh, yeah. It was a big deal back then.
Who was better at that age? Baseball.
Baseball, I was better. He had better long-term potential. He was long. He could pitch. I wasn't a great pitcher.
The scouts yeah. saw him as like high potential.
Yeah.
But you
yeah.
were producing at a higher level.
You know, he had joined a great team too. The Braves of the Rye Little League recreation organization that we were part of. They were the class of it. I joined the Cardinals, which were the up and comers. And, you know, I think they needed immediate production. So they drafted me.
Which makes sense.
Duncan was a long-term project to fill in for the stars that they already had in their organization. Because they weren't number one. Number one was the Dodgers. Number two was the Braves.
Of course it was the Dodgers.
Us, Cardinals, four. I can't even remember who the third team was. Irrelevant.
No, very relevant.
I can't remember it.
Did you have any say about which team you joined? Or was it purely, it was like an NBA draft. They pick you.
Parents, they had a big meeting.
Because there's politics involved.
Yeah, there's a lot of politics involved.
Elizabeth just weaseled Duncan onto the best team. Yeah.
Not the best team. Once again, the Dodgers were the best team. They had... someone you know, John Mulvey.
Oh,
shout out to Portsmouth High School basketball.
And he was a baseball legend, right?
Legend, the best player in the league.
Yeah.
He was going into his sixth grade year, our third grade year. Unbelievable pitcher, hitter, the whole thing. They were clearly the class of the league. I should have said that to start. Braves were close, but John Mulvey, he was, you know, that was the guy you were afraid to go in the box against.
Lefty, right?
Pitcher. Lefty, yep, the whole thing.
I've heard stories.
Yeah. But so Duncan didn't join that dynasty, but he was close thereafter. But back to it, I was a better player at that age.
Which isn't that surprising. Was it? I actually would guess it was similar in basketball.
We played in different leagues, you know, at that age, the Rye Recreation League that I was in only was at Rye Elementary. Duncan, I think, played in a Portsmouth, Newcastle League. So our rivalry and a little bit of friendship at that point was completely around the sport of baseball.
Oh, I actually didn't know that. Yeah. The basketball relationship hadn't blossomed. When did that take off?
So then I moved to Wheeling, West Virginia from fourth to sixth grade.
Yep. We shouted that out in the intro.
Yep. Thank you. Not Virginia, West Virginia.
Yeah, correct.
When I came back in seventh grade, Duncan was the big shot of Rye Middle School, Rye Junior High. And I was kind of the new guy in town. People knew me from my stint in second and third grade.
Well, your production on the Cardinals.
Yeah. Exactly. Thank you. But by that point, we were both starting to lean towards basketball. And the rivalry really took on another life of its own in middle school because now I was the new guy on his home territory of being the best player on the middle school team. It was some heated times in that little 2-year stint in middle school together.
You guys are, just to provide a little context, you guys are best friends at this, today I'm talking about. You know him better than anyone that I'm aware of outside of family, which is a large part of why I wanted you on this podcast. But you're saying at this age, you guys are rivals. Like, is there a friendship at all?
It's like, and I think this is something a lot of people can relate to in middle school, high school, it's a very fake friendship. We invite each other to birthdays or to go hang out with other people, but there is disdain for each other. And it really was, like, in all seriousness, we would try out for the same travel teams, AAU teams. And it was like, we each wanted to be the best player from, you know, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, the greater area of, and it was, we would like get in fights at recess at these travel tryouts. His dad was our middle school coach. I always thought Jeffrey, who I love and is a, you know, mentor to mine now, I always thought he was playing favorites in middle school. it was a heated friendship, but more of a rivalry.
It's so funny because it makes so much sense. Like, I knew some of this, but it does make so much sense because when I met you guys at Exeter, we're 18, you guys were really close at that point. So the rivalry had sort of turned into this friendship and you guys were teammates and you guys were, I said this with Elizabeth and I mean it, you two and Chris played AAU together. And I really think you guys were the reason we were so good at Exeter because you guys were our best players and you were tight and you were friends and you had history. But so to hear that you guys were rivals at this age, it makes sense because while you guys were so close at Exeter, there was still like this bitter, not bitter, but harsh competitive edge that you both had. And it would come out in whether we were playing 2-on-2 or open gym or spike ball or whatever, silly ball, whatever it was, you guys would go at each other in a way that honestly caught me off guard because you guys were such good friends. And I didn't have that relationship with some of my best friends back home, even the athletes that I grew up playing with. It's like, I was the guy, and I'm the guy in like practice when you're doing the zigzag drill where I want to get better, but I don't necessarily want to like steal the ball from you too much to the point where I embarrass you. You and Duncan would want to embarrass each other.
Well, at Exeter too, you're leaving out that for those who haven't been to Exeter's campus, it's sprawling. It's this, you know,
yeah.
very similar to college, small college campus, where you and Duncan lived on the far side of campus.
Yep, true.
And Chris Braley, who's been referenced a lot on this podcast,
yeah,
as well.
He's a guest soon.
He was on the other side with me, so it set up this natural 2-on-2 rivalry,
true,
whether it was basketball, true, you know, silly ball, which, you know, is basically a form of tennis,
yeah,
per
with
se.
Your hands.
On, yeah, with your hands on the Exeter campus.
Some battles.
Yeah,
on that
but
court.
But from the day you got there, it really was. It became,
yeah,
you two versus us two.
That's true.
And at the heart of that was always what you were mentioning, this,
yeah,
you know, this competitiveness between Duncan and I that, like I said, was rooted in a relationship that went back to second grade.
Yeah.
So
it's fascinating. And so I want to backtrack to that. So second grade, you guys, it sort of starts, then you come back in middle school. What is he? So he's the best. Is he one of the best players in the town at that point?
Yeah. Basketball? One of the best players in the town. And from what I heard, I missed his sweet spot a little bit. Fifth, sixth grade. He was truly,
that was his peak.
That was early on his peak, probably until he gets to at least his senior year at Governor's, Exeter, and obviously college.
That's interesting, because wasn't there a little bit of a lull there in between?
Because
when I met him, he was in, I think it was 10th grade, going into sophomore year. And he wasn't one of the guys, like, we met at the camp, which we've talked about on this podcast, in Brandeis in Boston, and he would not have stuck out to anybody watching. Yeah. So what happened in that stretch?
So if I came in right at when it started to go a little bit downhill for him, you know, in seventh, eighth grade, others were growing. He kind of spurted it up to, like you said, 5'8", 5'9", maybe,
yeah,
early there, sixth,
yeah,
seventh grade. But then he doesn't grow again until his, I don't know, sophomore, junior year, he starts to get a little taller in high school.
Yeah.
And then even senior year and our PG year wasn't until he got to 6'7", 6'8".
Yeah.
So while everyone was growing, you know, he started to get frustrated with it, started to lose some confidence. And at the meantime, I was one of the ones on the other side of it where I was growing into myself.
Yeah. You had the mustache in like seventh grade.
Yeah. Like
me,
I, you
too,
know,
by the
I
way,
was probably around the same height I am now, you know, around 5'11".
Yeah.
Like it was like we were going two different directions. And
sure,
that really did happen until you came into the picture when we both met you.
Yeah.
I only met you quickly at that camp because,
yeah,
you were with Duncan, I think, on his team.
Yep. Yep.
So I just remember you at the camp from afar, but even then that was kind of like the peak of my, you know, being a prospect for,
yep,
basketball,
yep,
in high school, and Duncan hadn't got there yet.
It's so interesting, dude, because it is such a factor in recruiting. I was the same way, where I was hairy legs, started to grow facial hair in like eighth grade, seventh grade. It's like before everybody else. And I was one of the tallest kids on my team, but I was the point guard. And it was the same thing. Whereas like in ninth grade, you would watch and be like, oh my God, this kid is like really has some potential. And then you just stop growing,
yeah,
and everyone catches up. And it just, it changes the recruiting so quickly based on when you go through puberty.
No, it's completely true. And, you know, you see that because a lot of times those kids that grow early, and I believe it was Malcolm Gladwell who talked about this in a book about hockey players, that because they were born at a different time of the year, some of them just had an advantage because then you're looked at as one of the better players.
Yeah.
You get put in, you know, the better age brackets, you get put on the better teams, you get put on this fast,
yeah,
track of development, that where if you know you're a little bit of a late bloomer, sometimes you can, you know, fall through the cracks. It's happening less and less. I think people are starting to recognize,
yeah,
it, you know, but it definitely is a part of the whole recruitment and becoming a prospect is what group you get placed in at these camps and,
yeah,
and what trajectory you're put on.
Totally. And I was a product of that, by the way. I got to play on the best teams in the Kansas City area growing up, and my team was always the one on travel tournaments. And then I got to the point where I was playing for MOCAN, and they went on the EYBL circuit my junior year, and I didn't make that team because it was like everyone else had caught up at that point. And it was this moment of realization of like, oh shit, am I done? Like, I think I'm done growing. Like, is this the peak of my... So anyway, Duncan is an example of how that, I think, can hurt you. Is that fair to say? Because like early on in his high school career, and he's talked about this on the podcast, he wasn't playing a lot sophomore, junior year at Governor's. And then his senior year, he has a great year. Is that alone enough for him to be like, okay, let's try this Exeter thing? Do you remember those conversations? And did you guys make that decision together of like, hey, let's go to Exeter?
You know, I think by that point in Duncan's life, he was starting to fall so in love with the game of basketball, and Elizabeth alluded to this last episode,
yeah,
of that I don't think it was going to matter what other people thought of him at that point. I think he was committed to it at that point of, even if he ended up just being, you know, a Division III player at whatever school, that he was going to give everything he had to till, you know, his last day of college at least, but yeah, maybe even further than that. I do remember the conversations, because just kind of the arc of it, you know, when we got out of middle school, we both went to separate high schools. And by sophomore year, we became, you know, really close friends. We realized we were both starting to get perhaps a little bit overlooked in the recruiting process, and had a little bit of a chip on our shoulder that we were trying to play basketball from the state of New Hampshire, by no stretch of an imagination, you know, a hotbed, and or basketball hotbed, I should say.
Yeah, right.
And I remember the conversations at that point was, all right, how do we, you know, position ourselves, you know, whether it's a PG year, transferring to another school, you know, whatever it was, of putting ourselves in the best position to get recruited, but also, you know, we were more focused on the development process of how do we get better?
Yeah.
You know, we do think we're good enough and we're getting overlooked now, but how do we get to the point where we can keep improving so that we can compete with anyone? And, you know, Exeter ended up being where that happened, but, you know, we were very close to going to the Tilton School with, yeah, with George Niang, a consultant of the pod.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, we loved their coach up there, a guy named Marcus O'Neill, and they had such incredible thing going.
Yeah.
You know, with Nerlens Noel and Wayne Selden and,
yeah,
and all these guys.
Squad.
We thought about that for a sec. And, you know, then the decision to play AAU basketball somewhere, that was a big one where we talked about it. And I think we made a really wise choice with Michael Crotty of the Middlesex Magic,
yep,
seeing where that program has taken off to. But it was a constant, you know, kind of, all right, what should we do? What's the next strategic step to try to get to where we want to basketball-wise?
And was it a joint decision? Like, were you guys going into that thing together at that point? Because what a friendship arc that is, from bitter rivalries to essentially saying, we're a package deal. Let's do this thing together.
Yeah. At some point in there, you know, we just started to realize that, just from a competitive standpoint, what we were talking about earlier, that we could push ourselves to another level doing it together.
Yeah.
We really believed in that. And you know, with the crew that Jay Tilton was forming at Exeter, and him kind of talking to us about, you know, around Chris Braley and,
yep,
and our other friend Jordan Hill, who ended up, yep, playing at Wisconsin.
And me.
And yourself, yeah, of course.
Of course.
How could I overlook that? But a bunch of other guys, too. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
We had a squad.
We had a great team. But that we thought if we went into it together, we could really push ourselves to become the best players we could be.
Yeah.
You know, just through working day in and day out. And that process, that turn in our mindset happened somewhere along, you know, between sophomore, junior year of high school.
It was something that, like your guys' competitive edge with each other, immediately jumped out to me, was how much you guys pushed each other because of that competitiveness. But it wasn't, again, it's the career arc of like the rivalry to the friendship. It was never, it was a together thing. Like, we're going to get to the mountaintop. And I've talked about this. I think maybe it was with Elizabeth. It made me reflect on how much I loved basketball, how hard you guys worked. And I mean that seriously. Like, it was 5 a.m. I think Elizabeth said 3 a.m., but it was at Exeter, 5 a.m. You're dragging me out of bed in the morning. Like, there was just this drive that, frankly, I honestly hadn't seen from many of my peers in Kansas. And that's no knock to my friends in Kansas, but you guys were just getting after it. Did you feel like you were pulling him along? Like, were you getting him out of bed the same way you were getting me out of bed? Or was he just as bought in, like just as driven? I think what I'm trying to get at is here is like, do you want some credit for where he is? Like,
none,
you're dragging him out of bed and working out?
It was, you know, we both, you know, were able to help each other get to new heights. It was not, you know, one person taking the other. It was like, but it was rooted in, like I said, that competitiveness of, we didn't want the other person mainly to have an advantage, because,
yeah,
we knew, you know, if one of us slept in, if you know, if you took a day off, that the other person was working. And Duncan certainly felt that way about me and me about him. It was, you know, we wanted to help each other, but we also wanted to compete with the other one.
Yeah.
you know, it, and it's interesting, you know, I give a lot of credit to another guy, Noah LaRoche, who you worked for.
Yep.
Who's truly one of the best coaches in the world. You know, he coaches a lot of the NBA guys in the summertime out in LA. You know, a lot of the stuff and ideas that we got for our training and the way we went about things, I stole from Noah growing up. And, you know, and Duncan knew Noah. We both knew he it felt like, at least we believed it at this stage of our life, had this blueprint for how we could improve. So even once we started doing other things at Exeter or with the Magic or on our own, it became, you know, this constant just, you know, taking that blueprint that Noah gave and then how can we make it a little bit better for our specific cases?
Yeah. No, it makes sense. And it's again, it's funny how the work ethic alone would have gotten him to a great situation playing basketball, because, you know, you put that much work in, you're going to be a formidable player. But then he hits the growth spurt, right? Like, we're talking about how puberty impacts your, like, then he hits the growth spurt. All of a sudden he's 6'8". And you will have a better recollection of this than me, but if I remember correctly, he at Exeter, we showed up in the fall and he had already made his decision essentially right away that he was going to Williams. Yeah. Then he has this incredible year at Exeter. We have this incredible year at Exeter. We win a championship, go 25-1, and Duncan's amazing, right? In that NESCAC championship game, he doesn't miss a shot. He's 9 of 9 from the field or something like that. And I remember even then being like, the narrative started to be, oh, is this guy, should he be playing at a higher level? But he had already locked in to Williams. And he, if I remember correctly, he's not the type of person that was going to back out of that commitment. Like, he was excited about Williams. And even though there were murmurs of like, oh, hey, he could probably go play at this level. He was fixated on, no, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to play at this level.
Yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes I see it played up in stories, the bit of it that, you know, he was completely overlooked by every Division I school, and that you know, how could they miss on this guy who could shoot it like this? But it's a little bit mistold sometimes in that sense that, you know, our year going in, so Duncan, his senior year, you guys have documented well on this podcast that he didn't start really playing at Governors until his senior year.
Yeah.
And he had a great high school season. But they weren't a great team. I think a lot of people wanted to see him do it in AAU basketball or on a bigger circuit, or, you know, in a bit higher level of high school basketball at Exeter. Well, that summer going into our postgraduate year, he had a serious back injury. He was still growing from 6'5 to what he was, and he had this debilitating thing where he really couldn't move very much. And I know he's talked about that a little bit on the podcast, yeah. But he probably undersold just how limited he was physically.
And he's what, 17?
17, 18, right in that range. So
late for a growth spurt.
Yeah. And by that point, Mike Maker, the coach at Williams College, you know, he had really started to turn on the recruitment process of that he was his number one target. You know, Duncan was this unique case of someone that wanted to play basketball at the highest level, but wasn't going to sacrifice the academic piece of it.
Yeah.
Or I should say Elizabeth
and
Jeffrey weren't going to allow it.
Yeah.
You know, that was going to be a big piece. So by the time we got to Exeter and he took that visit to Williams, you know, he didn't want to lose out on that opportunity, even though he knew in the back of his mind, I think, by that point, all right, if I wait this out, I can probably go somewhere, you know, bigger, maybe at the Ivy League or Patriot League.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to risk that. It was too good of an opportunity at Williams.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we joke about now, was his only path to the Power 5 level here at Michigan.
Yeah.
Was going somewhere where the coach believed in him that much and things turned out like they did. If he would have waited that whole year at Exeter, it wasn't going to lead to a Power 5 scholarship.
Right,
he would have got recruited by Division I schools, but this was the only way he was getting to the Big Ten and to Ann Arbor.
Whether you're going to be a groom, in a wedding party, or a lucky guest, everyone wants to look their best for a wedding. I know I did, and I spent a lot of time looking around. You know, I was looking at different rentals. I was looking at local places in Kansas City. It was hard to find the right suit. Stuff was expensive. Stuff didn't fit me the right way. Maybe didn't have the color I was looking for. I knew exactly what I wanted. I wanted that sleek midnight navy, you know, the really dark blue that almost looks black, but then you get it next to black and you're like, oh, that's blue. How sexy is that? And with Indochino, I had exactly what I needed, because with Indochino, you get custom fitted stuff to help you look great, feel confident, and enjoy the big day without fussing over your clothes. I got to choose every detail on the suit, the pants, the jacket, the shirt, stuff that I didn't even know you got to decide on a suit. I'm talking like pockets, shoulders, lapel, what color I wanted the buttons, where I wanted the buttons, all sorts of stuff. I went with the pants that don't have the belt buckles. It was a beltless pant, which just, I don't know, it just helped me feel even a little bit sexier on my big wedding day. And that's what Indochino can do. Every suit is made to your exact measurements and you can customize every detail. Create a suit that fits you and your style perfectly with options for fabrics, lapel shape, custom monograms, statement linings, and more. And the best part, Indochino suits start from just $429 and shirts from just $79. Let me tell you, I did a lot of suit shopping for my wedding and that's a price that is hard to beat. Indochino also offers completely custom fitted shirts, casual wear, and more. So it's not just for weddings, but I know we're coming up on wedding season. So if you want to look your best for a wedding, if you've got a big day coming up, getting the perfect look is no big deal with Indochino. Get $50 off your purchase of $399 or more by using promo code LS at Indochino.com. That's $50 off a purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com. Promo code LS.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I think it's so interesting how, and Elizabeth said this last week, if the story ended at Williams, it would have been a massive success, right? Like, he goes to this amazing school, good program. They were really good. He was a large reason of that. It would have been, you know, like, that's great. Happy ending, right? Like, all the work you guys put in, you're playing at Wesleyan. We win a championship at Wesleyan. He's playing at Williams. They probably would have continued to have really good years at Williams. Happy ending. Like, we're playing basketball in the college level. It would have been great. And then things just changed so quickly. And I remember thinking when Michigan became, because like you said, Williams was probably the only path where that was an option. But now, a year after Williams, in the year he has, Michigan's all of a sudden on the table. And I remember he dropped the J. Cole caption on Instagram, "Keep grinding, boy, your life can change in 1 year." And he's doing the flex with the Michigan jersey. And I remember thinking, holy shit, like, this is the greatest, like, he's playing at a Big Ten school. Like, not even playing, he's on the team. Did you, I'm going to guess you had more faith at that point than, like, I remember for me, it was like, oh my God, he's going to sit on the bench at Michigan. Like, this is amazing. What an experience. Yeah. Did you have the belief that, like, no, this guy, like, he's capable of, like, he's going to help this team win?
At that point, I did. At that point, after that Williams year.
It was apparent?
It was apparent. You know, I'd been around him enough to just know what was inside of him and that it was possible. But, you know, as, once again, just to reiterate what you guys have talked about on this podcast a number of times, situation is so important. Yeah. In any team sport, but particularly basketball, you just don't never know how it's going to play out. you know, and that was a big part of that conversation that summer, you know, of where he should go from Williams, that, yeah, he has an offer from Michigan and Creighton and Davidson, and those are incredible, but where is he gonna be able to continue to produce at that level, and where was the best chance that it would go right? Because, you know, it's easy to say in retrospect, you know, hindsight 2020, but there was a lot of moments in those Michigan days
where
it was like, whoa, like, you know, this could be taking a turn for the worst here in terms of individual. Now, we still had all these incredible opportunities here at Michigan, but in terms of becoming the best basketball player and reaching his potential, it was definitely up and down. There's a lot of ebbs and flows.
And we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, but it was such a quick rise that first year after he redshirted. So the first year he could play, it was such a quick rise. I remember, I think I was getting the live stats on my phone, and it was like one of the first games of the year he had 21 or something. Like, I just remember all of a sudden he was producing. And, you know, Dickie V's on the call. They beat Maryland, number 3 in the country. And Dickie V's like, how about he has a shoot-off, him and Curry? It's like, he's the greatest shooter I've ever seen at this level. It's like, he's going to get a chance at the next level. And it was just like, all of a sudden, in a year, it went from this guy's playing Division III basketball to now Dickie V's telling him he should have a shoot-off with Steph Curry on national TV. And it seemed like, the roller coaster was just going up. But then, like you said, it wasn't smooth sailing the whole time. Then he gets benched, and then he's back in the lineup, and then he gets benched again his senior year. What do you remember from those conversations? Because I know he was on the phone with you in those moments. It's like, what, where's his mental at that point? Like, what it's, and the reason I'm interested in this is because, you know, we're sort of going through it again, right? Like, he's now on the bench in Miami, and it's become a national media story of why is Duncan on the bench. And Elizabeth and I said this last week, we've talked about this on the podcast, this is new for him. Like, he's been through these moments of adversity. And I think you know better than anybody where his mental was at the first times he was going through this stuff.
Yeah. In regards to where it is now, you're right. He's been through this before of that, you know, we talk about it a lot with our current players here at Michigan. Coach Rico does an unbelievable job. We talk about the path to mastery, you know, that there is going to be when you're chasing something as, you know, far-fetched of being an NBA player to begin with, but certainly now where he is, which is you've gotten the big contract and you've had this success, but how do you continue to improve, continue to find the edge? And it comes in the day-to-day work, you know, and that's what was incredible just from my position of watching Duncan throughout the entire journey from when he was really from that sophomore year of high school, that about that point when we really went all in on that this is what we want to do. We even made each other, we wrote out these contracts, you know, in high school that it was like, no, like whenever it goes bad, we're going to hold each other accountable. You know, that this is what we want to do. We're going to chase this for as long as possible.
Wait, I have to stop. I've never heard this story. What was on the contract?
It was just a list of things. You know, I was the tryhard who actually wrote it down.
No, tryhard's the wrong term. This
Duncan
is amazing.
Laughed at when, you know, when we first saw it, but it was like legitimately, like, you know, I think I said, I believe till the age of 25 was like when we were like, no, we're going to go after this and see where it can go, even at the professional ranks. That whenever something went awry, that we'd always come back to, all right, what was this base, this blueprint?
Yeah.
That I mentioned earlier of what we believe in work ethic wise.
Yeah.
And that no matter what the situation is or what's happening, you know, of things you can't control at that given moment, this is what we're going to come back to. And as long as you stay that course over the long haul, there's no sure thing in this, you know,
of course not.
But that we were going to put our, you know, go all in per se. And I hear you say it now, bet on yourself of that. You just keep going along that path. Wow. And Duncan, better than anyone I've known in my entire life, has always came back to when things are wrong or things, you know, aren't going the way he wanted it to in whatever, but particularly basketball, he was going to stay along this path.
Yeah.
And he was going to keep working. And just once again, to bring it back to where we are now, because it was true at Michigan during those ups and downs. But like, that's what makes me confident it's going to happen now, is, you know, that he still is going to be the guy in there early every day, getting his work in, doing his routine. He's going to be a good teammate because, you know, that's the beauty of this. Now on the coaching side of it, I can empathize with the Miami Heat coaches and you know, all their decision makers. Now it's easy to,
right,
it's easy to trust them because they're such an incredible organization and
yeah,
have such a large sample size of proving that they're going to make the right decision. But regardless of that, that's outside of the control. Like, Duncan knows that he's going to do what he can to keep getting better, just like he has every day since he was 15. And to it, I know I'm going on and on.
No, please. I love it.
But when he was here at Michigan, there were so many examples of that. You know, if it was the redshirt year, which now seems like a crazy idea that you'd have to sit out a year to transfer, yeah, you know, right, in the modern transfer portal era. But
worked out for him, though.
Yeah.
I think that year is probably for the best.
But he flipped it. He, you know, he says this a lot. He flipped it into, okay, this is going to be a year where I don't have to worry about producing and yeah, this and that. It allowed him to get himself situated. So then that next year when the lights were on and it was time to go and he had those moments of early success, he could still stay on that, okay, this is my routine. This is what I did for that whole year of sitting out.
Yeah.
And then his junior year when he gets benched for DJ Wilson, who had, you know, suddenly a meteoric rise to being one of the best players on the team. I'll never forget that game. I think it was SMU at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah,
I should say I'll never forget that night talking to him. But that was that game where it was like, oh no, he had this unbelievable first year eligible at Michigan.
Yeah,
and now he's gotten passed.
Yeah, he didn't really play.
You know, he was suddenly pushed back to a reserve role, and it was incredible. He once again is like, okay, this is what it is. I'm not happy about it. You know, I thought after last year I was going to be on this rise to where I really want to end up. But now it's just back to what we've been doing every single day.
Yep.
Senior year, same thing. Isaiah Livers, a great player, comes in, makes him, you know, takes a starting spot again.
Yeah.
Or what he thought it was going to be his going into his senior year. He flips it. And he's able to ride that balance between that hard work
yep,
and still being a great teammate, which in a team sport is everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's that type of guy that allows the team to go to where they want to go, because no matter who's playing, who isn't, shoot, well, there's that guy and that guy and that guy who are still working, who aren't in the rotation
yep,
or aren't playing as much, and they're still doing what they're needed. I think that's why he's been on so many winning teams as well over the years,
yeah,
because he can still add that even if he's unhappy or he's going to stay the course in the work.
A couple of things. First of all, that was beautiful. Secondly, senior year, yeah, gets benched, thinks he's going to start, goes on to win sixth man of the year in the Big Ten. And you're so right. The importance of having, and you know this as a coach, but also as a player, Wesleyan was the same way. The year we won the championship, the guys who, this is going to sound like I'm complimenting myself, but I'm that's not the intention. The guys who didn't play a lot were awesome. Tim Gallivan, like all these guys, I could list all of them.
But just pause, sorry, because you talk on this podcast a lot because it's your podcast. You were one of those guys. We won a championship our sophomore year, Division III, because we had, like you said, you were going to name all those guys.
Studs,
the older guys. But you as well were a part of this. You were as good, really very marginally different than anyone in our rotation. But it was that role acceptance
yeah,
that we're talking about and your ability to keep working and the other guys that allowed us as a team to take a new height. Sorry, continue.
I thank you for complimenting me. I want to talk about me less, but I now sound like Duncan. But you're 100% right. The value that brings to a locker room when there's no toxic energy, everyone accepts their role, they understand that their number might get called at some point. Tim Gallivan might come in at Wesleyan and give us an 8-minute, 8-point stretch. And that stuff matters so much when everybody's bought in. And it's why, like you said, Duncan has been on winning teams at every level. And it makes sense. At Exeter, we were a winning team. At Williams, he was on a winning team. At Michigan, he was on a winning team. And he contributed to all those teams, but there were moments where he wasn't. There were moments at Exeter where he wasn't great, but no one, like there was never any griping. Everyone was bought in. Everybody understood what it was. And I think the Heat can make a run this year, and it's going to be for the same exact reason. Like, he's going to be of the utmost, he's going to be a professional, and they're going to call him on him at some point. There's going to be a time where he's needed, and he's going to be ready, because that's what he does. And it sounds so cliche, and he's said it on the podcast a million times. You know, it's You don't get caught up in the numbers. You fall back on the work. And it sounds like he's, you know, that Paul Rudd. Have you ever seen Paul Rudd Hot Ones where he's like, I repeat the same answer so much that it now feels like I don't even know if what I'm saying is the truth. I'm just sort of, I've memorized this response and now I'm just sort of regurgitating it. It feels at times like Duncan is doing that, like he's just saying the same thing over and over again. But it's true. And you laid it out very eloquently and very beautifully. But he's been that way and you've been that way since I met you guys. It's like the power and the ability to just fall back on the work. And I love this game. I love the work. It's part of my routine. And then the results fall. Like you just, or the results follow. You sort of let the cards fall where they may. There's something so beautiful about that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the truth about, like I said, any team sport.
It's not just sports either,
or any great business, or any
anything.
Anything good in life, there needs to be that. And I'm actually even going to push back on what you said before of that I think the griping and sometimes that you got to vent it out and be vulnerable in that way is part of it as well. You know, it's like
fair.
When you put as much into it as Duncan puts into his career, or most people put into their careers for that matter, I believe at least, there's going to be that process of processing whatever is going on and the failures of it and the things that aren't within your control. But with that is the perspective to see, okay, this is where it is right now. I can't control that. And now how do I work with it?
It's not easy though. Like that's the other side of this coin is that's really fucking hard. Excuse my language. My grandma's not going to like that. But it is. It's really hard. And especially where the thing that pisses me off so much, and now that we're on the topic, I just have to vent it out. Social media doesn't always matter, like the opinion on there. I know that it's easy to say to just ignore it. But the notion with Duncan now that it's like, oh, he's living the American dream. He's getting paid $90 million to sit on the bench. He gets courtside tickets to the playoffs. Like, I hate that so much because it should not be overlooked that you do that willingly and you're a good teammate and you're a professional. And like, that's not easy. That's not the American dream. It doesn't matter how much you're getting paid. That's a really hard switch to flip. And Duncan's built that way so he can do it. But there are a lot of examples of guys who don't make that transition smoothly. And then, like we said, it can be a detriment to the team. And so anyway, I just had to vent that out. That really pisses me off when I see
that. No, I mean, I think, you know, that's part of the entertainment value of the NBA or any of these major sports leagues is, you know, when the money gets as big as it is for these guys, that adds a whole nother element to it and puts them on a pedestal that allows fans to, you know, feel like they have free rein to throw stones or to say, well, you can't complain about this or that. When the reality of it is it's still really hard day in and day out. And in some ways, I think the money or fame or all those things that, you know, are elusive to most, it's like that makes it even harder. That makes it harder to, once you've gotten there, how am I going to stay doing what we mentioned before, the day-to-day work of it? Why? What's the purpose of it? You know, there's so many great artists out there, you know, authors, musicians, comedians that talk about this, but, you know, how do you do it? I think, especially in a world like the NBA where it's so insulated, and you're always then comparing yourself to the next person who has this and that. Yep. And it's really hard to keep that perspective.
Yeah.
And once again, you know, as someone who's seen Duncan through some of the tough times of it, even right now as this is, you know, been a struggle sometimes accepting this new role, it's his ability to stay the course in those moments that, you know, I think will always remain one of his most valuable assets as a player in person.
Yeah, and differentiate him.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, enough about Duncan. I want to talk about you a little bit. That's why I had you on the podcast. Because you're, by the way, you're crushing this. You got some good stuff in there. I want to talk current job, Michigan women's basketball. Because again, I've solidified my application to be a super fan. What's the jump been like for you? Because for everything you just said, your life has been, since you signed that contract, whenever you did, at 15, 16?
Somewhere in there. I'm not sure.
Since you signed that 10-year contract, we're going to give this everything until 25. You did. And by the way, your story, we talk about long shot stories. Yours is one that we're going to dive into at some point on this podcast with Duncan. We're not going to do it today. But your rise to 1,000-point score at Wesleyan and then just grinding to get all the juice out of your career that you could, go play with Sioux Falls for those four games, which, by the way, not a practice player. Like, that was an incredible feat, an incredible accomplishment, and a testament to how much work you put in. You do all this. We talked about Noah LaRoche. You worked with him. You're training NBA guys. It seemed like, for me, just watching you on this journey, your path was taking you to, oh, this guy's going to coach in the NBA. Like, this guy's going to go work for, he's going to be a video coordinator for the whoever it is. But you make this jump to the women's side, and it has been so much fun to watch you in this role, and I know how much you've enjoyed it and how much you've loved it, but I'm going to guess you didn't see yourself making that jump. What was the switch like? Because it's basketball. It's the same sport, but making the jump to the women's side, what was that adjustment like for you?
I think you hit it on the head there that, you know, my approach coming into it when I became a part of this program was that it was basketball, and it's been amazing to be reassured that that's true in this time, in my time with this program, that if you're around people that love it and you know, the players, if they want to get better at it, if the coaches are passionate about it, women's, men's, whatever, you know, whatever level of college, whatever level of pros, like, that's what makes it fun. And yeah, I didn't see this coming when I, you know, came on as a GA here, but I remember the interview very vividly of feeling that way about my boss and head coach right now, Kim Barnes-Rico, that, wow, that woman is passionate and loves this game and has done it. You want to talk about long shot stories, like, she's a woman who started coaching high school basketball and has never been an assistant. She went from high school to Division III to Division II to St. John's and to here, and has won everywhere she went. And I wanted to see, you know, what her magic was. And once again, it comes back to what we were talking about, that the magic's just in the day-to-day. She works. And if you put that type of work ethic with that type of love for the game, and surround yourself with enough of those people, you know, you talked about our seniors of Nas Hillman, Danielle Rausch, Amy Dilk, Emily Kaiser.
Yeah.
You know, they did it on a team level. And then in this office, I know I'm just going to keep listing names.
Do it.
Don't mean anything, but, you know, Amy Mulligan and Sarah Van Meter, two people have been here for 10 years. And I'll just, and, you know, name my assistants I've worked with since I've been an assistant. You know, Val Nainema, Carrie Moore. We just hired Aaron Bath from NC State. All these women are just so passionate about basketball in the same way that Duncan and I and you were growing up. It's just, and I can't tell you how much I love being around people like that. That's what fuels my love for the game. Yeah. Whenever I've been on great teams, or, you know, some of the best relationships of my life have been around that, a true love of basketball.
Yeah.
And I think that's true on either side. And I really hope that more and more people start seeing that, so that, you know, the WNBA, college women's basketball, can get the attention and these players can get the salaries they deserve.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you described it as a personal flaw earlier. It isn't a personal flaw. It's a societal flaw that we don't appreciate it.
Yeah.
You know, it's taught. It's taught this is the way it's always been, which is very rarely a good reason for anything to be. It's just because it's the way it's always been. So, you know, I'm excited about it. We have a great group coming back, and I've loved my time in the women's game so far. I hope eventually there can be more of a synergy between the two games.
Yeah.
You know, I hope that barrier gets broken, particularly in men's college basketball at some point, of women working in that space as they're starting to in the NBA.
Yeah.
And obviously vice versa, like it's been for a long time.
Yeah. It feels like it's gotten better, right? Because like the argument is like, well, no one watches. It's not on TV. It's like, how could you? But more and more, maybe I'm wrong. I think you probably have a better pulse than I do. But this year it felt like more games were televised. I was dialed in, by the way, and millions of people were. The viewership numbers were way up for the tournament. It was so much fun to watch. By the way, the WNBA is the same way. The WNBA finals were elite. For anybody who missed those, you missed out because it was high-level basketball. It is. It's so much fun. And you can see it in the NBA, too. Like, guys are more outspokenly supporting the WNBA. Guys are wearing the hoodies into games. Guys are sitting courtside. I think it's so good for the game because people will follow, I think, as these prominent athletes more and more are supporting each other. It becomes, like, cool to do so. Like, there's a serious impact there because, like you said, it is the same game. It's bad. Like, you sit and watch those games. You sit and watch the, you know, women's national championship. You sit and watch the WNBA finals, and it's really good, really entertaining, high-level basketball. And I really think it's just ignorance that people don't tune into it. But as it becomes available,
yeah,
people will find it.
Well, you hit it on the head once again that it's about, you know, the access to see women's basketball needs to continue to grow, and we need to continue to market these athletes in society and you know, to the youth so they can be familiar, because I refuse to believe that just because dunking, for instance, is less in the women's game, that's really a reason that people aren't tuning in as much. I think
it's a terrible argument.
Yeah,
by the way.
I think the answer to that is people like to watch sports where they know the players and they know their stories, yep, and they can have this shared human experience, per
totally,
se, of like, oh, you know, that we have this in common to the person I'm watching, or we don't have this, or you learn about them. I think we saw that in Ann Arbor this year. Our best player, Naz Hillman, you know, she was able to relate to the community, to the Ann Arbor community, but also the University of Michigan and the largest alumni network in the world, in a way that connected with people. And we saw our attendance rise and we saw our following rise. And it's because they could say, oh, there's Naz, you know, and there's all these other players that I know, and I know a little bit about their journey. So we need to continue to propel that into the national spotlight. I think people are trying. I think the inequities of, you know, the bubble season,
yep,
and what our players didn't have access to in terms of the weight room down in San Antonio was, yep, a big starting spot to ignite people into doing a little bit more, you know, a little bit more. That's what we have right now.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of work to be done, but
for sure.
But I think we're starting to move in a good direction in terms of that.
Yep. I agree. All right. I don't know how long we've been going, but you said that you only had till 6:30 and it's 6:32. So I've taken you 2 minutes over your agreed upon end time, which I apologize for. It's 2 minutes. You're not going to be able to get back, but thanks for coming on the Long Shot Pod. This was high level stuff. I love you very much, and you're gonna come back on at some point. You're gonna come on when Duncan's back, and the three of us are gonna dial it up, and we're gonna there's a lot more to tell. There's some more stories to dive into.
I appreciate you having me on, Davis. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of what you and Duncan are doing, and thank you so much for this opportunity. It was great to talk to you.